In this current environment, companies also were going to face a new calculus involving voluntary disclosures. Whether it is export controls or sanctions violations, companies have to assess the evidence surrounding the potential violations and weigh whether to voluntarily disclose to, let's say, OFAC, and separately to the Justice Department. In some cases, companies may have to disclose to both DOJ and the regulator OFAC, or, and it could involve even the Bureau of Industry and Security at the Department of Commerce if it's export controls violations.
Global companies face unprecedented risks and challenges in today's economy. To mitigate these legal and economic risks, companies are rapidly embracing and elevating the importance of robust ethics and compliance programs to promote positive corporate citizenship. On Corruption, Crime, and Compliance, you'll hear from industry leaders and insiders about how to create effective ethics and compliance programs that will mitigate risks and maximize financial performance. Here's your host, Michael Volkoff.
Welcome, everyone. Mike Volkoff here for another episode of Corruption, Crime, and Compliance. Today, we're going to talk about sanctions compliance and enforcement. You know, we've heard a lot about the new FCPA. I've been writing a lot about the coming wave of sanctions enforcement based upon, you know, resources being moved to DOJ, to the National Security Division, as well as public pronouncements by various officials about the intent to bring more cases against corporate violators. So we're going to see like a new FCPA type regime applied to sanctions enforcement and export control enforcement. And companies have to understand here what the red lines are. In other words, where do you define where criminal and civil enforcement risks increase? In contrast to the history of FCPA enforcement, DOJ and OFAC have already provided helpful guidance to alert companies where risks are likely to increase and where they're going to focus. So sanctions enforcement involves a mix of civil and criminal line drawing. On the civil side, OFAC has explained that sanctions violations can be found based on strict liability with aggravating factors that turn on the actor's state of mind as one aggravating factor. In addition, third-party liability for distributors and agents or resellers extends to situations where a principal company knew or reasonably should have known that products sold to a third party were intended for shipment to a prohibited entity or individual or to a prohibited country. Third-party liability for violations occurring in a company's supply chain requires companies to break down its supply chain and learn the sourcing for all companies in its supply chain. It is clear that a failure to examine and assess your supply chain can lead to civil liability. So now in defining where criminal enforcement picks up on the culpability spectrum, DOJ and OFAC have defined potential criminal conduct based on the term willful, meaning when an actor knew that his or her conduct was wrong, but did not necessarily know the specific law that he or she was violating. Applying the you know it when you see it standard, companies have to weigh the evidence of surrounding circumstances to determine if an individual actor or actors possess the requisite intent. This determination will turn on the attribution of individual conduct to a company or several. You could have more than one individual's conduct. If it was a scheme carried out by several people, then their individual misconduct can be attributed to the company based on respondeat superior principles. That is, whether the conduct was committed in the course of an individual's duties and in furtherance of a legitimate business purpose. That doesn't have to be the sole purpose, but you could have a personal purpose like to steal, but you could also be acting in furtherance of a business purpose as well. Now, we don't have enough enforcement actions yet to track where the precise line falls between criminal and civil and where OFAC and DOJ are going to divide it. That is still to be defined by reviewing a meaningful record of DOJ enforcement actions against sanctions violators. The situation is really akin to the early days of aggressive FCPA enforcement, where enforcement and settlement cases were reviewed for important precedent and explanations. DOJ's record here is about to be defined, and companies, commentators, and trade compliance professionals will be reading tea leaves and looking for patterns. In this current environment, companies also were going to face a new calculus involving voluntary disclosures. Whether it is export controls or sanctions violations, companies have to assess the evidence surrounding the potential violations and weigh whether to voluntarily disclose to, let's say, OFAC, and separately to the Justice Department. In some cases, companies may have to disclose to both DOJ and the regulator OFAC, or, and it could involve even the Bureau of Industry and Security at the Department of Commerce if it's export controls violations. If the evidence suggests that one or more actors violated export controls or sanctions requirements, and that the actors did so with knowledge that the conduct was illegal or with deliberate indifference, the company should disclose to both DOJ and the applicable regulatory agency, be it OFAC or BIS. Now, the calculation here is heavily weighted towards disclosure. Companies that depend on export control licensing, for example, have to maintain a positive relationship with BIS. In general, companies that engage in significant exports do not want to duck scrutiny or appear to be evading compliance with applicable regulatory regimes. Regulated companies have too much to lose when they jeopardize the trust between themselves and their regulators. I've always said, if you're a regulated company, you need to get along with your regulator. That's critical to the business. And that militates and that sort of weighs towards voluntary disclosures in those cases. And there's a robust record of voluntary disclosures by people to OFAC and to BIS. It is a very common occurrence. Now, DOJ is looking to bring criminal cases for sanctions and export controls violations. They trumpeted the hiring of 25 new prosecutors and its plan to aggressively prosecute companies for violations. Given this stated intent, companies have to redouble their compliance program efforts and monitor trade activity to ensure they're not caught in the initial wave of example criminal prosecutions. So let's talk about what are the outer edges of trade activity. How far does OFAC's jurisdiction extend? How far does DOJ's jurisdiction extend? And we all know what a core sanctions violation looks like. We've seen the heartland of such misconduct described on numerous occasions in OFAC enforcement actions and settlements. In this environment, however, companies have to be aware of conduct that may still violate the law, but is not necessarily in the heartland of misconduct. DOJ, OFAC, and BIS are well aware of the broad reach of its criminal and civil statutes and regulations. Luckily, these three partners have issued some guidance in this area. And always look for what's called a joint compliance notice. And a recent one outlined legal application of sanctions and export controls, laws, and regulations to non-U.S. persons. We all know about the extension of liability to U.S. persons. Now we're going to talk about people who are not within the U.S. person definition, which is often used and is critical to establishing OFAC or BIS jurisdiction. Companies should carefully review this important document and apply its principles to export activity. So let's talk about sanctions first. U.S. persons are required to comply with OFAC regulations, and it's defined, the term U.S. persons is defined, to include all U.S. citizens and permanent resident aliens, wherever they are located, all persons when they're physically in the United States. So you could have a foreign person who's on a visa and is in the United States, and while in the territory of the United States, they have to comply with OFAC sanctions. And three, U.S. incorporated entities and their foreign branches. Now, some of the sanctions programs under this third category extend to foreign entities owned or controlled by U.S. persons. So the broadest reach for the U.S. person definition extends to Iran, Cuba, Russia, and North Korea. Non-U.S. persons can also be subject to certain OFAC prohibitions by causing or conspiring. So they may not be a U.S. person, But if they cause or conspire or facilitate a violation by a U.S. person which violates the U.S. sanctions or engaging in conduct to evade U.S. sanctions, these persons can be subject to jurisdiction. Now, non-U.S. persons usually run into enforcement liability when they engage in conduct involving, one, financial transactions in U.S. dollars, which require participation of U.S. banks, typically through correspondent banking arrangements, and two, attempts by foreign actors to disguise or mislead U.S. companies as to the ultimate destination or prohibited customer by altering relevant transaction documentation, including shipping information, bills of lading, invoices, and other documentation. Let's turn to export controls and the Department of Commerce's BIS, Bureau of Industry and Security, enforces export controls and licensing where applicable for dual use and certain munitions items covered by the EAR or the Export Administration Regulation. U.S. jurisdiction extends not to the person, but to the items that are covered. In other words, wherever that item goes, it is covered by the export control regime. So U.S. jurisdiction goes to items covered by EAR anywhere in the world and to foreign persons who deal with these U.S. items. The EAR applies to the initial export, and the EAR is the Export Administration Regulations, applies to the initial export and extends to, one, subsequent re-exports, that is, from one country to another, or to an in-country transfer, and two, goods that incorporate a certain percentage of controlled U.S. content above the de minimis thresholds, and we'll talk about that in a minute, and three, exports from abroad of certain foreign-made items produced using U.S. software technology or production equipment, and this is called the foreign direct product rule. So you have the de minimis threshold rule and the foreign direct product rule. So the EAR applies to all shipments involving a third country that is a subsequent shipment after the direct ship. Also, if a foreign party possesses an EAR-controlled item outside the United States and wishes to ship it to another party in another country, the foreign party will need to obtain a re-export license from BIS for such a transaction. Similarly, the EAR applies to a non-U.S. company that manufactures items containing U.S. origin components or software. The precise application will depend on the value of the controlled item within the overall item. So it could be a cooling system, let's say, within a truck or whatever, and whether the percentage exceeds the applicable de minimis threshold. In most cases, the threshold is 25%, except for highly regulated countries such as Cuba, Iran, North Korea, or Syria, where the threshold is 10%. Additionally, some foreign-produced items using U.S.-controlled technology, software, or production equipment are subject to the EAR when exported to certain countries or parties on the entity list. And a good example of that is Huawei. The most relevant example of this latter category is BIS's imposition of a license requirement for Huawei and its subsidiaries. So now let's turn to criminal enforcement. And DOJ is authorized to bring criminal enforcement prosecutions for willful violations of U.S. sanctions and export control laws. And we've talked about that. So that's 50 U.S.C. Section 1705C or 50 U.S.C. Section 4819B. Criminal conduct includes causing a violation of any license, order, regulation, or prohibition issued pursuant to the IEEPA, as well as causing or inducing the doing of any act prohibited or the omission of any act required by the ECRA or the EAR. Willful violations of either statute are punishable by imprisonment of up to 20 years and a $1 million fine. Now, the full scope of DOJ's new aggressive sanctions and export controls enforcement program has yet to be defined. They have brought several cases against individuals, and each year they bring, you know, close to 40 cases each year, which is indicative of its likely approach for prosecution of companies, but the full scope of its strategy has not been revealed. For example, DOJ has brought charges against multiple foreign-based actors for, you know, allegedly seeking to unlawfully transfer U.S. manufactured technology to prohibited destinations. Now, those individuals' conduct is going to be attributed to various companies, and we're going to see more and more of these types of prosecutions. Should be interesting. Hold on to your hats, and we'll start to see cases soon in this area. Thanks again for listening, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Corruption, Crime, and Compliance.
If you enjoyed this episode, the best way to support the show is by subscribing on your favorite listening platform. To learn more and connect with Michael Volkov, go to volkovlaw.com.